everyone, to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight is another bucket list moment for me. There are some writers that I adore so much because I've loved their books, but more because I've had the honor and pleasure of meeting them in person. Carol Mia is one such author. You know her by the name Caroline Brown. She is a women's fiction writer. She writes the most delicious cowboy romances, and she has the most delightful husband named Mr. B. I am honored beyond words to have Caroline Brown on my show. Carol Mia, welcome, my love. How are you?
I'm fine, darling, and thank you for having me on the show. This is just such an honor and a pleasure to get to visit with you again.
You know, it's been too long. It's not even quite a year, and I need my Carol Mia fix again. So we're going to have to do something about that soon. But in the meantime, congratulations on the new books. The Sometimes Sisters is just absolutely stunning. Stunning.
Thank you.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
I thought that you couldn't top the Lullaby Sky, and of course your titles are so dynamic. This comes really close to almost taking its place, you know, as my favorite book, but not quite. So
everyone has their favorite, honey.
I do. It's true. And I love all of your women's fiction. I love the fact that you talk so lovingly about friends and sisters and family, and those are so close to your heart. Tell me why, how do these stories come to you?
They come to me as a movie. I'd love to see these made into movies, by the way.
I would too.
That's just the way they come to me. I see the whole thing. I see their expressions. I see the way they walk. I see everything about them, just like you're watching a movie. And then
Wow. That's
what's in my head. And then I just write what I see.
Well, you know, there's something I want to talk about your writing, because can you share when you started writing?
I was 49 years old, and I had been trying to get into the industry for 20 years. I had enough rejection slips to wallpaper the White House, and I mean that big one on Pennsylvania Avenue, not that little two-holer at the back of the lot. I could have wallpapered the whole thing, but I just couldn't get a toe in the door. And, of course, this was 21 years ago, and you could not – there was no such thing as self-pub. So it was just get into a publishing house, and I just could not seem to get there. But finally, I had sent two books in to Kensington, to Hillary Sayers,
mm-hmm.
who's the editor there, and
mm-hmm.
she gave me a call, and she said, I want to buy both of these. And I thought she was joking. I'd worked
wow.
so hard for 20 years. But about a week or two before that, someone said to me, Carolyn, now you have done this and you've done this and you've dabbled in oil painting and you've always been a seamstress and blah, blah, blah. And I said, and they said, what are you going to be when you grow up? Here I am 49 years old. And I said, well, I don't know. Do I have to decide today?
Yeah, right. Why should we start something new?
right. Well, then Hillary called me about a week or so after that, and I thought, well, finally, I know what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a writer. And that was 21 years and 90 books ago.
It is amazing to me that you have that many books. And I know you have still the fountain of youth of ideas, that they keep coming at you one after the other. I think you write two books at a time. You write some of your cowboy romance, and then you write some of your women's fiction too. You have to be so prolific, and yet you always show up when your fans want to see you. You are always there to lend a helping hand, to sign books. How do you fit so much work into such a short amount of time?
It's called tunnel vision. you have something that you have to do today, and today is that's what you do. Whether it's edits or whether it's reading over proof copy again, or whether today you're going to Texas to sit on a library panel. That's your focus for today. And on the days you don't have to do something, then you get to be creative and write 5,000 words.
It's amazing to me. It really is, Carolyn, that you are so prolific and that you were published in the middle of your life. You were published for the first time.
Right.
And yet every single story that you write is so different. The overarching theme of the book is just amazing.
We have to keep it fresh. We have to keep it fresh because your readers don't want to read the same book over and over with just the names changed.
It is true.
They want something fresh. They want something new that hasn't been possibly, even if possible, that hasn't been written before, that they haven't read before.
And that's hard.
Their emotions.
Yes. You know, you sent me the Lullaby Sky with a very important and very touching inscription to me. And that book was very important in my life. And for those of you who don't know, I'd like Carolyn to tell you a little bit about the Lullaby Sky. And she also knows why it's important to me. Will you share, Carolyn?
Sure. The Lullaby Sky is dedicated to all the people who help or run safe houses for abused women. And that's what the book is about. Hannah, the heroine in the book, it starts with her in the courthouse getting a divorce. That is the very first chapter. So it's not like she is a wimpy character in it, but she is getting a divorce. And then on the way home, part of the divorce is that she gets to keep her house, which was one of her relatives' big two-story house. And it sits kind of on the Red River, just barely into Texas. And on the way home, she gets to thinking about the abuse that she has lived with. And she thinks, that I've got this big old house, so I'm going to turn this house into a safe house for women. It's out there in the country. It is in a little tiny area, a little tiny community. What better place for a safe house? And so she does that. And consequently, she meets a lot of abused women and deals with a lot of their situations and helps them. But at the same time she is helping them, they are helping her to overcome this that she has lived with in the past. And she has this little girl who is absolutely adorable. And she's the one more or less that names the book The Lullaby Sky, because when her father would be mentally abusive, they would go outside and look at the stars and sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And that's kind of where the name of the book comes from. But that is what the whole book is. I approached it not to give details, so many details, about the actual abuse. That is over by the time these women get to the safe house. What we wanted to do was relay the hope that is beyond it when those women finally get to the place where they say, I've had enough, I'm getting out of this situation, now what do I do? And I wanted to put forward the hope that can be there for them if they were just willing to take the step to get away from it and find a safe house.
It is so remarkably well written. Most of my friends and Facebook friends know that I am a survivor of domestic violence and that I also am a certified victim advocate. And I'm often leery of reading stories like that because it doesn't hold true. Because because a lot of people write stories and don't understand there is so much empowering and so much hope when you survive and when you turn your own experience around and pay it forward. And I think that not only is Hannah helping others, but she's getting so much out of it too.
Right.
And it seems to me that when you pay it forward, the one who pays it forward thinks they're doing something good, but boy, are they getting something really good back, Carolyn, don't you agree?
Yes, definitely.
Regardless of what it is, whatever you're doing in the name of helping others, I think it comes back to you triple in self-esteem, in confidence, and in joy in seeing other people being helped.
Oh, I believe it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what goes around comes around.
It really does, and in spades, too. So, which brings us to the book you just released and had all your Facebook parties. You had 5 Facebook parties in 2 days, which I love.
Right.
Only you would do that. And they were huge successes, too. And I know I shared all the links throughout my network. So which brings us to the new book, The Sometimes Sisters. Once again, you have this fracturing of friends, family, and through something horrible, these women are brought together. And even though they don't want to be there, they find out, they think that they're really not that close, but find out really they are. But the way you told this story is so unique and so lovely. It was funny, it was sad, and it was uplifting. Where
Thank
did
you.
Sometimes Sisters come from?
Well, without even realizing it, I think it came a lot from my personal life. I had 2 sisters, and I was the oldest, so I could really relate to Dana as being the oldest and more or less being rejected by her father because my brother and my sister and I were we shared a mother, but our father left us when I was just tiny, when I was just a little girl, 4 years old. And I had about 9 stepmothers past that. Really 9 stepmothers. And then children with 2 women that he didn't marry. But he left us, and then he went on to other women and had other children. Now, one of my sisters I never met. She died when she was a teenager in a car accident, and I never met her. But I did have a full-blood sister. So I could relate to Dana being rejected by the father. I could relate to the other 2 sisters being sisters because I did have a full-blood sister who, before she passed away 4 years ago, was my absolute best friend. So we were not best friends as young children or as teenagers or as 20s. It wasn't until we were probably close to 30 that we became best friends. So I kind of had that to relate to, too. And then I was raised by a blind older grandmother. So I had Granny there. I had that to draw on. I have a lot of background in family dynamics that I can draw on. And I think that's where it came from. It was just a kind of like a fluke. Mr. B and I were down in Texas driving around looking for places that would make a really good story. And we came across a bridge over the Lake Palestine. And over there to the side, it wasn't there, but I could envision it, this little resort sitting there. And the story just started. I started telling myself this story about that little resort. And by the time we got home, I had the plot just about done.
Wow. It's amazing. I love your process for inspiration. You had Remember you told me when we saw each other last summer that you pick up so many visual cues that really that is how your stories come together.
Right.
And I love that because when I start reading, I immediately have the beginnings of the movie starting in my head for that book. It is in color for me. Regardless of the descriptive narrative and whether there is very much descriptive narrative, depending upon the author, I always envision reading in color.
I guess that
sounds odd. Do you
really? I write in color.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I can, I even listen to people who are on the show, my guest, and I envision them in color and sitting and talking to them in person, whether I have or not. Now, you know, you and I have met and we spent a lot of time together and had a great time, by the way. So,
yes, ma'am.
we really did. We laughed something fierce, didn't we?
We had a good time and there wasn't even any liquor involved.
I know. It was crazy. You know, we didn't even have mimosas for breakfast. So
no.
Go figure. Gosh, we really do love each other.
We do.
I'm telling you. I just, it's hard for me to imagine in 21 years, 90 books. And I know I will say this to you about three more times while we're talking, because I envision you putting the end on one and then immediately starting another. But I know that you and Mr. B have kind of this extended family, and I know that you're not only sitting around writing. So when you sit down to write, you really must stay in one place for quite a long time to crank
yes.
out so many books. Is that
yes.
true?
Yes, I put the finish on, I wrote the end on a rough draft. Yesterday at 5 o'clock. This morning I got up and started a new one.
Tell me about what it's like to be Carolyn Brown writing. Do you get up early? I know
mm-hmm.
that you have lots of varmints and critters around your
just
house.
One now.
And
just one critter now. Boots Randolph Terminator Outlaw is our only
Aww.
Critter now. Mm-hmm.
Aww.
But he is very, very spoiled.
Well, of course he is. He's a cat.
Right.
So.
My writing day begins in the morning. Most usually I'm up by 7, if not before. Usually it's at 6 o'clock. 7 o'clock to me is sleeping in.
Wow,
and,
me too.
Yeah, I'm an early riser. I'm happier that way. And I usually have about 1,000 words in before breakfast.
Good grief, woman.
Then Mr. Brown and I have breakfast together. And I come back and I plug in about 2,000 more by lunch. Then I usually cook lunch. Some days we have pizza or hamburgers if I'm in the middle of a chapter and I don't want to leave it. And then I finish up with another 2,000 in the afternoon.
My goodness.
And so a 5,000 word day is usually my goal, and it's what I really like to get done. That doesn't mean it's 5,000 words that is fully polished and ready to go. It means it's 5,000
sure.
words.
Sure, sure. You know, it was interesting to me. You said, you know, I waited all this time to get published, and it's like you're making up for lost time. And
yes.
so I think that's great, and I love it. And I imagine you continuing on at this pace for as long as you can. You have no intentions of slowing down, do you?
No, I'm fixing to sign more contracts to write 5 books next year.
My goodness. All your kids are grown, and you have lots
mm-hmm.
of grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the funniest things I know about you is that Mr. B does not read your books before they're published. And will you tell listeners why you say that?
Because I can't afford a divorce.
That's right. He doesn't need to know about the Cowboys. He can't.
No.
He doesn't need to know about the Cowboys.
Well, you know, I tell people now that he's a very understanding man because he doesn't mind me having cowboys in bed with us at night.
There you go. I think he's terrific.
Yeah, he's a good man. because he doesn't mind that. Because I go to sleep at night, the way I put myself to sleep is shut my eyes and visualize the next chapter in my book.
My goodness.
And a lot of times that's cowboys.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with your cowboys, I have to tell you, sister. They're pretty cool. You know what I love about your cowboy books to your romance is that you don't get kind of in the gutter with anything. You really feel the romance. It is, you feel it. You don't have to read what is actually graphically happening. And that to me is a great relief. It kind of reminds me of watching an old black and white film. You know, when your imagination was allowed to go wherever it took you, but you didn't have to have it spelled out on the screen. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And that's exactly what I like to hear. I think that when women, or men too, I have a lot of men readers, read those kind of scenes, the bedroom scenes, I think that what they really want to read is the emotion attached to it.
Yes.
And the feelings attached to it, the warmth. The other part is just biological, you know, it's just body parts, more or less. But
sure,
this, I think that you, when you say he ran his the back of his hand down the soft part of her neck, that says more than describing the scene.
It does, and also I like the fact that your cowboys like to kiss a lot, because me, a really good kiss is really, really, that defines everything as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
It's the beginning of everything, or it's the end of nothing.
Right. Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want to take a second here and just say, because I adore Carolyn Brown so much, I actually, normally I'd be selfish and I wouldn't share her with you, but I'm going to open up the studio phone lines. If you wish to call in and say hello to my gorgeous Carol Mia, please call at 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. Carolyn, I want to talk to you about the nuts and bolts of writing and ask you a few questions. When you first were published, even though you had been writing all those books and all those books, I want you to look at yourself when that first book came out, and I want you to look at now, The Sometimes Sisters. What's the difference?
The first books I wrote, I hope that every single book I have written got better than the last one. And when I go back and look at the earlier books, I can see progress. But I sincerely hope that even looking ahead into the future, that every single book is better than the last book I wrote. Someone asked me once, when do you stop learning? And I said, well, the day I die.
Yeah, when you're in the casket or in
that
the grave.
I can quit learning then. Until then, I want really good editors that push me out to the very end of the cliff and make me better. I want to be better with every book. And my first books, they have a good plot. They have a good story. But I don't think the writing was near as good as it is today. And that doesn't bother me because I want to be better with every single book.
I just, you know, I don't know how much better you're ever going to get when after 90 books. You know, I mean, I, as your long-time reader of yours, don't know if a book could be any better than they've been, especially in the past few years that I've been devouring all of them. I don't – maybe it's something you see, but I don't think your readers see – I mean, I just think they're magnificent. I mean, you're on every – you're on New York Times, USA Today. You're on Wall Street Journal. You're – every review – editorial review has been spectacular. I don't think you've ever had a book that's a flop, and flop being the, you know, all I mean, it depends on your definition of, you've never not had a best-selling book. So, you know, better, I think, is just in your mind, because I don't know that you can get any better. Certainly, your stories are diverse, and I love that, and I hope that always continues, and I suspect it will. But let me also ask you, what's the best part of being a writer for you?
Working in pajamas.
Yeah, I got to say that's a pretty good thing.
That's a wonderful thing. Actually, the very best thing, and I have to say this, the best thing is knowing that I'm touching someone's life. That brings me great joy. Recently, I had a handwritten, as a matter of fact, I've had about three or four from this lady, handwritten letters. And you don't get many of those in this day and age.
No, I know.
That tell me how much my books have helped her. Her daughter even wrote to me and said that this woman had lost her best sister and lost her husband all in just a matter of months. And she went into a deep depression. And then she found my books. And she said the daughter told me, she said, Mother started calling me and laughing, and I hadn't heard her laugh in months. And she said she started to call and to laugh and to tell me about these books she was reading, and said she talked about those characters like they were family. Did you know so-and-so happened today to this person? And she said, I'd have to stop and think, no, that's in that book Mother's reading. But then we did a book signing in Bonham, Texas, about a month ago, and this lady drove 4 hours to come to that book signing.
Aww.
And to tell me how much that what she read that I wrote meant to her, that keeps me in the writing chair.
I bet it does.
When I can touch someone's lives like that, it just keeps me writing.
What is the hardest thing about being a writer?
Distraction.
Really?
Yeah, I would think that would be it. Be in the middle. I've got to where I seldom answer the telephone. Unless it's one of my kids or somebody that I really want to talk to, I don't even answer the phone. But distractions is hard about writing to me. That, and I have a little trouble with the last two chapters, because I've developed a relationship with these characters, you see, because I have voices in my head. And those last two chapters mean that I'm bringing the whole thing to an end. And that to me, that's a little hard.
You don't want to part with your characters, do you?
No. They become very real to me.
What do your children and grandchildren think about your writing success? Do they understand how successful you are at doing this?
Well, I think they do. I have some granddaughters that of course have to read everything I write because they love it. And I have one little granddaughter who just sent me a note the other day and said I cried the whole way through this book. Because what she was reading was one coming out in May, and she was reading an advanced reader's copy. She said, I could so see my own life in this book, Nene. And that is what they call me, Nene. But they don't I think they know how successful I am, but when we're all together as a family, I'm still just Nene. I'm just still the grand matriarch of the whole family, and I boss everybody.
But you know something? Here's the thing. Even when I saw you and people were surrounding you and all, you're just still you.
Yeah.
You were just as down to earth as anybody I've ever met. I mean, we talked for hours, and I bet we could have talked for a few more after that.
Sure.
And we didn't talk. I don't think we talked about books, really. I think we just talked, I don't know, girlfriend stuff, right?
Girlfriend stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So,
well, like I say, I don't know how to be anything but who I am. And who I am doesn't know how to put on airs. I didn't learn that in school.
How are you going to write any more historicals by any chance? Or have you moved past that and gone more to women's fiction?
I loved writing historicals. But both of the companies that I work for now, Montlake Romance, which is Amazon, Amazon imprint, and Grand Central, and I work for the Forever imprint, have asked me to write contemporary and to keep my stories in Texas. And that is fine with me because I adore Texas. I was born there.
Right.
And I love Texas, so that's no problem for me to write about it. And besides, with my drawl, my southern Texas drawl, East Texas drawl, the dialogue comes so natural to me.
Well, that's another thing I wanted to ask you about. There is a long history of southern storytelling. It is very distinctly southern storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's Alabama or whether it's Mississippi or Tennessee or Oklahoma or Texas, it is southern storytelling. It's very unique. When you were growing up, was there storytelling in your family along, and especially with your grandma?
Yes. Yes. Of course, Granny was blind. There was no reason to have a television.
Sure.
And she did have a what the Blind Foundation called a talking book, which was just kind of a manual record player. And they would send her books on those things to listen to. So I listened to a lot of books growing up. But when her elderly friends would come over or when we would go see the five aunts, she still had five aunts alive when I was a little girl. And they all lived to be almost 100. But when we would go see the aunts, I would sit in the corner. Of course, I led her everywhere. And listen to stories. And I loved
Do you think that's part of where your love of your own storytelling came from?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Just all that background of being, I don't think that growing up with an older woman like that, and then, of course, when my mother remarried, she married a man that was actually older than my grandmother.
Oh, goodness.
So I had a stepfather who was a year older than my grandmother, and I don't think that I see age at all.
I think that you weave the different ages together so well.
Thank you.
And it seems so natural to me that, you know, your stories all aren't centered on the gorgeous, you know, 20-year-olds and everything, and they only have gorgeous 20-year-old friends, and you never know about parents and grandparents or nephews and nieces or grandchildren. I think that when I read your book, I want to take one of the quilts my mom handmade for me and wrap it around me and grab one of my cats and lay on the sofa and read your book. That's how I'm most comfortable.
That is the best compliment I've had in years.
Good, I'm glad.
That's a beautiful compliment, darling.
That's just how I feel. It's the perfect book. And I have to tell you that I share your books with a lot of people, but I make them sign a paper saying they're giving them back to me.
Because that is adorable.
I have book plates in the books that you've given me, and it's, you know, property of Pam Stack. And I say, you have to sign this because if you don't give me back my book, and you can't take it because it's signed to me, so nobody else is going to want it. But if you don't give it back in X amount of period of time, I get to come over and take your car, and that'll be it. Because then I'll drive to Oklahoma and I'll get me another one.
Well, come right on, honey.
I'm telling you. You said you just put the end on a book yesterday.
Yes.
Is this going to be a cowboy book or another women's fiction book?
The one that I just ended is a women's fiction book. It's called The Magnolia Inn.
Oh,
it's about a bed and breakfast in Jefferson, Texas.
You know I'll be waiting. I'll be waiting, honey, for it. You know
and
that.
In May, we start a brand new cowboy series, the Longhorn Canyon series, with something called Cowboy Bold. And there's a little boy in there you are going to love.
I bet I will.
He's high-functioning autistic.
I love it.
And he is just, his name is Benji. And I found him in a, I think it wasn't a McDonald's. What was that little restaurant? Anyway, it was one of those little fast food places, like a Wendy's or whatever.
All right,
Charles and I were, Mr. B and I were out on a research trip, and we went in there for ice cream, and some lady brought in about 12 or 13 of these little children. And I think
sweet.
It was a church group, and they were having hamburgers and french fries and ice cream. So they were all sitting up here lined up, but this one little boy was sitting off to himself reading a book. And
aww.
you could tell that he was a little bit challenged in some area. And that became my Benji.
I can't wait to read it. You know, final words from you. What do you want people to know about you, and to how do you want to invite people to read your books, and what do you want their experience to be, Carolyn?
I want them to feel every emotion. I want my readers to feel what I am trying to tell them. I want them to feel it when someone's crying or when someone's laughing or I don't even mind. I even want them to feel anger.
Yes.
I want them to feel what I write. Unless I touch their emotions, they won't come back. They don't have anything to, when they finish a book, I want them to think beyond the book. A week later, think, oh, I remember so-and-so said that in that book. I remember how I felt when I read that.
Well, you know, you have me as your biggest fan, and every book you write, it stays with me.
Well, you know, I adore
after.
You, Pam.
Well,
and
I do
believe
you,
we were
Carolyn,
sisters in another life.
I think we were too. We definitely have the same crazy sense of humor, and we appreciate the zany things in life, and that's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is. It is a wonderful thing, darling.
It is, my darling friend. I love you, Carolyn Brown, and I love the fact that you came on my show after having such a crazy launch week. You know I wish you the best of success, and I send you all my love, and you will come back, won't you?
Yes, ma'am. You just holler at me anytime after a book comes out, and we will do this again.
I hope we will. And please give my love to Mr. B. I haven't seen him since last summer, but, you know, I ask about him all the time. And I have a very fond place for him. Mr. B wears a T-shirt that has an arrow pointing to Carolyn when she's walking next to him that says, I'm with the author, or I'm with her. And he's so cute, and he just wears it with pride. He has the best smile, and he gives the best hugs. And please give him a kiss for me on the cheek,
I will
okay?
do it. I will do
and,
that, darling.
And thank you for making this such a special day for me. I adore you, Carolyn Brown. Go get Carolyn's books. The Sometimes Sisters, I'm telling you, is one of the finest books I've ever read. It will stay in my mind and heart forever. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on Authors on Air. I appreciate
you're
it so much.
You're welcome. Have a good evening, my friend. And that's our show for tonight, folks. Thank you to the brilliant Carolyn Brown, and thank you for listening, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, everybody.
Good night, darling.
Good night, darling.